So you've decided to give up that old behavior that's been killing you and all you care for and surrender to a power greater than yourself. That's the first step. Surrender is what opens the prison door. Now it's time to walk through that door and into a whole new way of life. Spirituality, self-care, service, social connection, and the simple daily disciplines that pave the way to lasting freedom. This is Positive Sobriety.
Welcome to the Positive Sobriety Podcast, and I'm your host today, David Hampton, and our co-host, Nate Larkin, is, as we say, out on assignment today. He is catching up on some speaking and some things, some opportunities he's had, and since Allie's better diagnosis news that we shared in our last episode, at the beginning of our last episode, Nate is able to get away again and do some things that are serving some other people. So we're always encouraged to know that Nate's out there, but we sure miss him. But today, we are going to be talking with a guest who has some very unusual and creative and very effective therapies regarding recovery. And one of the things that we're going to talk about is our personality types as those of us that would be diagnosed as highly sensitive personalities. And that is a real thing. It is a clinical thing. And there are some of us, about 20% of the population, as we'll find out from our guest, that actually experience life in a really different way, on a really different plane. And for some people, coming in and sitting down and talking and doing traditional recovery work is not as effective as experiential things and creativity. And I'm in the crossroads of the nations today, where we record every week, and Rex is here with me, and we are looking at a room that is decorated for Vacation Bible School, and the theme is like some kind of under-the-sea thing, and we've got
living water.
Thank you, Rex. We've got banners of blue aqua fabric and sea turtles and crabs and sea creatures all in hanging from it, and I love the fact that the heart of a kid can embrace this so well and just walk in and totally get enveloped by the concept. And what we're talking about today is not dissimilar to this concept of just being able to get in the creative moment and let things be what they are and how to express that. So I don't want you to get away, because we're going to really have some fun talking with our guest, Tammy Roth, who is a licensed therapist here in the greater Nashville area, about how she transitioned from some more traditional work in treatment centers and has gone in a really, really interesting direction that involves mindfulness and yoga and creative work with clients that help them unlock some things that many times get overlooked in the recovery world. So it is definitely positive sobriety, and we want you to stay right where you are, and we will be back right here on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. Welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast, and I am your host again today, David Hampton, and our guest is Tammy Roth. And Tammy is a therapist that I know in the context of treatment world, treatment circles, treatment centers. And but Tammy has branched out and is doing some very creative, unique things. And when I saw some of her work and heard about how she's approaching working with recovery in a really creative way, I thought that's a perfect thing for Positive Sobriety, because even though I know, Tammy, you have a story of recovery of your own that I'd love for you to share with us, I'd love to also really hear more about this kind of unique, creative way that you're incorporating art and mindfulness and all kinds of stuff into the recovery of, I think, particularly women. And so, Tammy, welcome. Welcome to the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, tell me a little bit about how'd you get here?
All right. So I'll go back to, I had a corporate career for 15 years, and apparently I had a drinking problem too. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you were told. Huh?
See, and so I changed careers and became a therapist and actually started working in the addiction field, which made my drinking problem not seem as bad because the people I was working with were a lot worse than I was.
Okay.
Unfortunately, that prolonged my drinking problem for another 10 years. So I was a therapist with a drinking problem for about 10 years and learned a lot about addiction and recovery from the other side. And then finally, just the anxiety and the depression, and I was a high bottom drunk and very high functioning. Didn't have any external consequences, but had immense internal consequences. I was just, the self-loathing, the shame, the depression was just really to the point that it was about to take me out. Mm-hmm. And so I finally took a sabbatical from being a therapist for about a year and got myself together, got sober, and kept trying it on my own because that's how we like to do things.
Yeah.
And would make it about 3 months. Probably 3 months was about the most I would ever make it. And and just got tired. I did that for about a year and finally surrendered and went the AA route and stayed sober from that point on. And that's been over a decade.
Wow.
But what I found along with AA in the beginning was I discovered this creative part of myself that I never knew even existed. And I joined an art co-op called Art and Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I painted every spare moment I had.
And
and I didn't know at the time, but I was just like painting all my feelings out and had an art show on about my 2 year sobriety date. And I had 40 big, huge paintings that I'd done. And, because when I do something, I go up.
That's right.
And so art was a big part of it. Meditation, yoga was a big part. Dream work. I went to a 2 year dream school and really learned the power of the subconscious, all these symbols and archetypes, and then the dreams and the art started kind of flowing together.
Oh wow.
And so that's why recovery's been so exciting to me, is just like I've just discovered this whole other aspect to myself that I never knew existed.
Yeah.
And so then over the past 10 years in working with women in recovery, I didn't realize that what I was doing was actually a part of my recovery. I just thought it was a new hobby to take place of, not being hungover. And what I discovered, I started really researching, like, okay, I knew I was numbing pain out, and I'd even had people say, well, what are you numbing? I'm like, I don't know what I'm numbing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had somebody say, well, when you get sober, you'll find out. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
And I got sober and I still didn't know what it was.
Uh-huh.
It was just pain.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I went on a quest of really trying to understand my own pain and Learned a lot about things that I've heard on your podcast, you know, learned a lot about neuroscience, relational trauma, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And probably one of the most pivotal things I learned for myself was I'm a highly sensitive person. And
that was new to you?
That was, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you know, even in the big book, Bill W. says, we alcoholics are sensitive people.
Right.
I just thought, it was new, even though it wasn't new. It's like, well, of course I am. And so there's a psychologist who has 20 years of research, Elaine Aaron, and she has an assessment. So I started giving women this assessment when they would come into treatment. And what I found was it wasn't a formal research project, but I found that about, I'd say probably 95% of the people that came through scored very high as a highly sensitive person. So I really made that kind of, I became very intrigued about that. Mm-hmm. And you know, as an alcoholic, we know being highly sensitive can be really painful.
Right.
But there are so many gifts that come with it.
Yeah.
Because highly sensitive people are more creative, more tuned into music and art and nature and spirituality. Right. And so that just really opened up a portal to me. Like, yes, we do need to focus on the pain and the addiction, but let's pour as many resources as we can into really developing this other part of being sensitive. Mm-hmm. Like, and self-care is a huge part of that, because, which I also think art and, you know, dream work and all that is a form of self-care.
Yeah.
But when you're really taking care of your highly sensitive self in that way, then you don't want to numb it out.
Right. And one thing I'd love to ask you about with that is how do you get people to celebrate their sensitivity as a creative or as a intuitive personality? Because especially like when I encounter men who are highly sensitive personalities, and there are, but men definitely stamp that down way back early on. That's not okay. Right. You know, don't feel, don't this. How do you get people to realize that that's not weakness, or that's not you just being, you know, put on your big boy panties and go out in the world, and you know what I mean? The things we all have been told in that way.
Actually, that's one of the hardest parts, and that's why I love the research on HSPs, because only 20% of the population is highly sensitive, and Elaine Aaron's work has a lot about how in other cultures, even in the animal kingdom, like the highly sensitive are revered, because we're the ones that sense things are going on, you know. And in the animal kingdom, the highly sensitive of the species are the ones who says there's a tsunami coming, there's a predator coming, you know. So it's a slow process, and there's a lot of, well, the way I really introduce it is there are so many gifts that come with this, and it takes such self-care. You're highly sensitive are, you know, that exists. And if you don't take care of yourself, then you're going to be like a raw nerve. Mm-hmm. Yet if you do take care of yourself, then you connect to all these realms that can really create an amazing recovery. So you can't change the fact of your sensitivity. So what do you want to do with it?
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's a slow process, and it's about retraining the people around you. It's having to go against societal norms of, you know, saying no and not going to that. And because there are a few, you know, like highly sensitive people need more time alone. We need more quiet time. Mm-hmm. We need less stimulation overall, you know. It's just,
yeah,
but it leads directly to relapse if you don't care for that.
Right. And do you find that highly sensitive personalities are more prone to self-loathing and some of those kinds of things, or
no? I think that's the alcoholic addict,
just
part
the
of
alcoholic
it.
Addict part.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's that, and that's interesting too, because, like you said, in our addiction, we all are a rather sensitive bunch, but not everybody is a highly sensitive personality, right? So,
right. Say more about that. What do you mean?
Well, as an alcoholic, someone may be very sensitive for their own, you know, shame and, you know, the self-loathing and the things that feel sensitive, but that's not the same as a HSP.
Right. So, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so an HSP, there's an acronym, and I hope I can remember what all the letters mean. DOES does. So the D is a depth of processing. Mm-hmm. Like we take information in a deeper way. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't just kind of, you know, surface over us. The O is we're easily overstimulated. Mm-hmm. So through the senses. Mm-hmm. The E is more empathic, just that, mm-hmm. you know, being able to feel other, not just empathy, but really empathic, feeling others' feelings. And then the S sensitivity, just yeah. through, like, strong smells, coarse fabrics, loud mm-hmm. noises, mm-hmm. bright lights, those kind of things just affect us more.
Mm-hmm.
So that is... That's the sensitivity, but then if you add in like relational trauma, if you're a highly sensitive person who grew up in a dysfunctional home, mm-hmm. then the personality becomes sensitive or defensive or
yeah.
know, whatever you want to call that.
Yeah. Well, and so you discovered this creativity in your sobriety, and then you have now kind of taken that into a therapeutic... Would it be fair to say a therapeutic realm?
Yes.
And so you really aren't, you know, out at the treatment centers doing what would be the same kind of therapy work you did prior to all of getting into this really creative, mindful form of
right. Well, work. I mean, I've always worked at places that recognize that, you know, mm-hmm. the right brain is a entry point into healing and wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
And I left the treatment center and have spent the past year being just a kind of traditional, well, as traditional as I can be, addiction and trauma therapist, uh-huh. you know, doing things like brain spotting and EMDR and whatnot. And
yeah.
I just found that what I'm passionate about is really helping women understand this sensitivity and nurture that and create a life. And, you know, I see them really coming alive when they get in touch with the creativity, connecting to nature, their intuition, all that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I just decided that's what really, you know, fuels me. So I've just kind of let go of the more traditional therapy, and I'm going just with the spirituality, mm-hmm. creativity coaching mm-hmm. As it relates to sobriety.
Right. So. Well, I want to hear more about that. But before I do, I want to ask you, what do you think was the thing that had you so blocked with regard to your own artistic gifts back prior to sobriety?
Well, I think this just the same as not realizing I was highly sensitive. I honestly think if I'd taken the assessment like right before I got sober, I would have scored like zero,
mm-hmm.
you know, because yeah. I was so defended and cut off from my feelings, creativity is just that mm-hmm. life force flowing through us. And I was cut off to everything, you know,
right.
just so I think that, you know, the alcohol numbed it out, overworking, overachieving, mm-hmm. numbed mm-hmm. it out. I was very left brain dominant. And
yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, so if I am, and your practice is primarily set up for women, is that right?
I do work with men too, but
okay.
I primarily see women, yes.
Okay. So if I come to you, what is the experience I'm going to have, going to be like, as opposed to if I just go to somebody that's going to do a, you know, CBT talk therapy kind of, you know, experience?
Right. Well, first, the starting place would be taking the HSP assessment mm-hmm. and just really helping you understand about your sensitivity and you know, building in some accountability and really thinking through, okay, I'm highly sensitive, and which means I'm also mm-hmm. sensitive to drugs and alcohol.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, just thinking about how even like the recovery period after a relapse or using that kind of thing, you
right.
know, how that affects the, because this is also, the sensitivity is in the nervous system. Mm. That it's like, it's all within the nervous system.
Okay.
So from the start, we're going to look at how you score on that, mm-hmm. really educate you on what that means. Then teach you some self-regulating techniques with Kundalini yoga and meditation is what I've been found to be most effective for really calming the nervous system. Mm-hmm. Besides neurofeedback, I would say neurofeedback's number one.
Yeah,
but not everybody can afford that or get to it, and
right.
so I can teach practices that you create your own daily practice.
Mm-hmm.
I create a daily practice for you to use. And then we're going to start exploring, like, what brings you alive and, you know, you just going back to childhood even.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, what were those fun times? Is, you know, is it nature? Is it painting? Is it drawing? Have you always wondered about painting? Like, just starting to explore that kind of thing
mm-hmm.
and really start slowly building those things into your life and really trying to dream about what an ideal life, like, you know, if you had the magic wand, what would
right.
your life look like?
And yeah. What do you say to people, though, who say, well, I mean, I'm sure initially that you've got folks that say, well, I'm not creative. You understand, I can't draw a stick man, or, you know,
right.
I'm not that way.
Right. Well, we're all creative,
right.
but let's look at how do you like to cook? Do you like to go camping?
Mm-hmm.
When you take a walk in the woods, like just so mm-hmm. we start exploring how the creative life force is way more than, you know, using the canvas. And so
right.
really helping. It's ultimately, I think what it's about, because it can also be through music, it, you know, there's just so many different ways, but it's ultimately about getting you into your right brain, into something that brings you into the present moment, and that you're just like, ugh, you know, you just feel that, like, ugh, this nurtures my soul.
Yeah.
Like one woman, she had actually been sober for a long time, and when I presented this whole concept, she said, that makes sense of why I like to go to the gift shop at the Frist. I just walk in there, and I just feel so much better, because she's surrounded by beauty and
mm-hmm.
creativity, and
mm-hmm.
it's like, yeah, we just kind of breathe that in. It's
yeah.
just an innate part of who we are.
Yeah.
So, you may not be artistic,
mm-hmm.
but that everybody is creative,
right?
And just helping explore that.
So, what about you? You talked about yoga and all of that, and then mindfulness, meditation, things like that. Is there a spiritual component to this? That,
well, to me, that is spirituality.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, that's being able to really connect to me. That is, yeah.
The spirituality is the holistic whole. Part of the whole experience, actually, right?
Because right? So. You're connecting to something bigger than yourself,
right?
When you're in that, So then the meditation and mindfulness. The reason I like Kundalini so much is that I've found, especially for people new in recovery, that to sit and focus on my breath, you know, people are ready to jump out of their skin, and
yeah.
So the Kundalini practice, there's all kinds of different ones, and so I can do a little research and target, you know, specifically what you're wanting to work on, but
mm-hmm.
there'll be something to do with your breath, maybe a mantra, something to do with your hand, like it's,
mm-hmm.
it's gives you lots to focus on and helps the time go by,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually working on the nervous system to regulate it, calm it, and it breaks through energetic blocks, So what typically happens is at the end, people are like, "Woo, I kind of have a buzz." And I'm like, yeah, with no consequences. It's a
yeah.
natural buzz,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
you start getting high on life.
Yeah. And so I imagine then people begin to, as they practice this at home, you've given them these at home ways to approach this. They're finding their anxiety levels diminish, and therefore maybe their cravings and things like that.
Yes, absolutely. And relapse happens, and you know, so this is by no means a silver bullet, nothing magic, but
nothing is,
right?
Is it?
Yeah, we haven't found that yet.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's my guidelines are abstinence is the goal, honesty is the requirement, because I'm not about any shame, because shame is just, so toxic, which we know that.
Yeah.
And so we just explore, okay, you drank again. Let's talk about what led up to, we just break it down and figure it out. And what were you doing when it was working? What were you doing when it wasn't, just typical like that. But
yeah.
But yeah, people, I really find that people feel a lot of relief, usually instantaneous relief, which we like.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of times I'll do the practice with them the first time, and at the end of 11 minutes, it's like, oh my gosh, this feels good.
I'm
like, 11 minutes, you can do that.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Like, what, being so efficient, or efficiency minded.
Yeah.
how long is this going to take me before I feel better?
Right.
So in 11 minutes even,
a
person can experience some level of change.
Yeah, I would say even like 3 minutes. And I also give things you can do in the car, turn your radio off and focus on your breath in this way. And, just really more kind of proactive regulation.
Yeah. Well, I saw some pieces that you did on social media recently. Can you talk about those?
Sure. So my...
I know you didn't do those as a...
Not as art, no.
Right. There's a whole thing behind it, and I'd love for you to... If it's not too personal.
No, not at all. And I like putting it on social media because right off the bat, you see I'm not some, great artist. I am somebody who uses creativity to process.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm, kind of like I've always tried to take the stigma out of alcoholism. I'm trying to take the fear out of putting paint on a canvas.
Yeah.
And so I started painting way back when, and one of the most, I don't know why this was so freeing to me, but when I found out you could just paint right back over a canvas, it was like, oh, well, if it's horrible, I'll just paint over it again. And what I found was, especially if I'm like processing something or stewing over something, instead of me sitting and obsessing, which I'm very, very good at, quite good at that, if I take it to the canvas... it's all of a sudden that just kind of, it's on the back burner. I've shifted over into my right brain. I'm in the moment. I'm just noticing what colors I'm drawn to. I might just, start off by just spreading different colors on the canvas, step back, see if I see any images. Ooh, I see a little heart shape, that kind of thing. And let me expand on that a little. And so, just recently I ended up with all this chaotic color in the background, all kinds of scribbles, and then over that was a heart, so I highlighted that in red, like a Valentine's heart, and then I thought I saw an eyeball, so I pulled that, kind of enhanced the eyeball, then I had a set of eyes, and I stepped back, and it's like, I have all this chaos, and there's my heart, and then my eyes are front and center, and I would just sit in front of that painting. There's nothing pretty about it, but there's power in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain, but it's just like getting your feelings out and then letting it kind of inform you. And it's fun.
Yeah. But I saw the painting, and I thought it was really compelling. And I didn't know the story or the idea really behind it, but it drew me in, because I thought there's a lot to unpack in that.
Yeah. And I think there probably is still a lot more to unpack in it. But I will say, I'm just sitting back looking at it, staring at these great big you know, it looked like a third grader drew these eyeballs with eyelashes, and and it was, but they were, I'm just looking at them like, there's so much power there. And then I was looking at the whites of the eyes, and I just teared up because I remember days that I would just stand and look at my eyes in the mirror, and it just broke my heart how, like, red and bloodshot.
Mm, yeah.
And all this many years later, seeing how white the eyes were on that painting just touched me in a deep place.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Probably a little bit of healing happened there.
Yeah, know. Absolutely. Well, do you get invited into places, treatment centers, and things like that to bring in what you're doing now?
I'm starting to. This is a new approach. And I offer, I'm doing more on my own than I am getting invited anywhere, but I do one day and weekend retreats. So that's one way for people to really get in touch with this kind of stuff. Another thing that a powerful piece to this whole process is something called family constellation work.
Okay.
And which is not, it's just totally different, but it's also just something I'm really passionate about. Mm-hmm. And it's doing ancestral healing. Yeah, and just really finding out how much, I mean, there's a lot of scientific evidence now just from the epigenetic standpoint of how much we're carrying from our ancestors.
Yeah.
You know, just biologically, but then emotionally, you know, how it just keeps getting passed generation after generation. And so really helping stop that generational trauma and make sense of it. So that's another piece.
Do you find people are open to that ideology, or do you really have to unpack that for people?
That part, people are so open to that. Uh-huh. Like, it typically makes a lot of sense.
Right.
And, you know, you don't have to come directly from alcoholic addicts. Like my parents, I grew up in a alcohol-free home, but the patterns were there. And,
Yeah, I grew up in an alcohol-free home, but my mother grew up in alcohol chaos.
Right, mine too.
You know, she was raised by her grandparents, and she had seven alcoholic uncles, and it was a crazy place at times, you know?
Yeah.
And so she was determined to not have alcohol in their home at all, you know? So she, you know, did all the things that people do in order to assure themselves that no one in their family will experience this, you know. And imagine her surprise when I'm 45 and I to say, "Mom, we're going to have a talk." You know, guess what I'm dealing with,
right?
You know, and it was tough for her because she was, you know, the cliche, "We didn't raise you to be this way," kind of came out, you know. But you know, talking about your family constellation work. Man, though, you know, if we go back through on, you know, these ancestors and things that we as a family know, about our history, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And the difference with this work, is that it's not psychodrama, it's not acting anything out, it's actually stepping into the energy field of the family system and healing it on a soul level. So it gets a little bit esoteric, and it's called phenomenological work.
Mm-hmm.
We can't explain it, but there's enough, I've experienced it enough in 3 years to see, wow, I don't know what's happening, but we know it's working. And it's more or less that the systemic field of the family system has tension in it when there's these unresolved traumas that haven't been acknowledged. And so when we do healing words and we separate out the generation, each generation takes responsibility for their actions and their traumas. And we may not even know what they are, but it just quits getting passed down. You know, I think of it as like, here we are, we're the pack mules for our family trauma, you know, and so, yeah, of course we're sensitive and we numb it out, that kind of thing. So it's a fascinating process that was started by a German man who's now in his 90s, and he learned it by spending 10 years with the Zulus.
Wow. Now that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is way more than what somebody who might have a certain faith perspective would call generational sin. You know, this is this is way beyond that kind of concept.
Just, yeah, this is more. It's in the energy field. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's all fascinating, Tammy. And so I'm guessing, if I'm looking at your life from 10,000 feet up, and I look back a few years, and you're in recovery, you're doing well, your practice is working in treatment with other recovering people, and then you go to private practice or whatever, and you're pretty secure with what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I have to think that there had to be a hold your nose and jump moment into this kind of realm to make this kind of a shift. Would that be fair? Is that true?
Yeah. And I know the exact moment that I jumped. What I realized is I'd kind of viewed all of the spiritual, the creative, the intuitive, all that stuff, I kind of viewed it as hobbies. Mm-hmm. And I would kind of slip it into my therapy practice, you know, that we'd be on a therapeutic path. And I'd say, well, what if I brought in, you know, what if you tried this? And those were the sessions that I would come most alive in. Mm-hmm. And I just remember one morning thinking, man, what would it be like to just do that stuff? And then, you know, the inner critic was like, you can't do that. But all of a sudden it hit me. It's like, well, those were the things that were so important in my recovery. So why, mm-hmm. I don't know, just all of a sudden everything kind of fell away and it was like, why not do that? And, mm-hmm. And it's been very well received. So.
That's great. Yeah. So if people want to get in touch with you and they want to know more, they might want to make an appointment or start a series of sessions with you. How do we get in touch with you?
TammyRoth.com would be the easiest way.
Just okay.
Go to my website.
Okay. And where are you located, in any one spot?
I'm a moving target. I have I work a few days a week at Hazel House, which is an integrative practice on Music Row.
Right.
And then I have a small retreat center with retreat space in Hermitage on Percy Priest Lake. So I'm there.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So yeah. We've got woods and trails. And so I really love doing a longer session there where we can get outside, send you out into nature, really, you know, get grounded and more present. There's also an art studio there, mm-hmm. But that's only like 10 minutes from the airport,
yeah.
So it's not far.
What would you like somebody who's considering coming to you, but they're still just kind of on the fence, what would you like them to know or like to say to them?
That I do a free 30-minute consultation. Let's just meet and talk.
Okay.
And I'm not about trying to rope anybody in that, you know, I've met with people and be like, you know, this doesn't feel like the right fit. But mm-hmm. So it's just to spend time and see if that, you know, if it feels like something that would really add to their healing journey.
Mm-hmm. And is this something, Tammy, I mean, I know I keep saying this is my last question, but for people that are more reluctant to sit down and talk, to sit down and explore certain things just in a more traditional way. Is this something that those folks might respond to, feel more comfortable in doing with you than what they might do in somebody else's office?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, because we could also go on a walk on a trail and kind of check in, or I get a little bit of your story and then I put you at the canvas, or mm-hmm. send you into nature. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think of it as just, it's the back door.
Yeah.
You know, I've come in the front door and the side door for a while, and now I'm going in the back door with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. And, what about meetings and things like that? Do you encourage your folks to continue in community recovery?
I think community is hugely important. I've also found that there are a lot of people who are very resistant to traditional 12-step, and yep. I don't force that. I'm like,
right.
Well, how can you create a community? Let's talk about that.
Right.
And that's how I got sober. But then I don't go to meetings anymore. And mm-hmm. I'm very open about that. It's not that I'm opposed to it, but I've created my own community
right.
now.
And you've found community in yeah. other ways and other people. And that makes sense. But you're not walking it alone either. So that's
right.
Yeah. The important point. Tammy, thanks so much for being here.
Thank
it's been
you.
Great to hear what you're doing, and I hope that a lot of folks get in touch with you and can kind of uncork, no pun intended, their creative self,
yes.
their true self, find their story, all that stuff that sounds fascinating. I would love to, I'd just love to go in and experiment with that sometime.
Yeah.
Sounds great. But awesome. Thank you for being here. It's been great. And everybody, we'll be right back on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And we're back here on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And I am so grateful to Tammy Roth for coming in and just sharing with us what she has done, her own story, but what she has done and is doing to help people in such unique, creative ways. I think that we are creative beings, all of us. We are creative souls. And just the way that our minds and bodies respond and experience creative work that unlocks our story, even to ourselves. Sometimes we even surprise ourselves in the creativity that we experience. And so I'm so grateful for our guest today, Tammy Roth, coming in and just being able to share a really unique approach here in the Nashville area. And we have information that Tammy gave us. If you'd like to get in touch with her, I would really encourage you to do that, because it would be well worth sitting down and exploring the fact that you may have some unlocked, some creativity, some untapped artistic or just as she said, food, writing, music, love for nature, building, giftings that have gone untapped in our addictions or in our substance uses and in our compulsive behaviors, you know, in our pain and in our numbing out, those things get lost. And when we rediscover them or even discover them for the first time, as she did, it is a part of a great awakening. And it wakes up that front part of our brain that responds well and helps keep us sober, keeps relapses at a minimum, and a lot of good research there that she shared with us. So I am so grateful to Tammy Roth for being with us. Nate is going to be with us next week. Rex and I will be here again, and we've got some great guests coming up and some exciting stories, and you don't want to miss another episode of the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
The Positive Sobriety Podcast is recorded at Crossroads for the Nations in Brentwood, Tennessee. Live producer Rex Schnelly, music by Rex Schnelly, theme music by Matt Ulrich, hair and makeup by Lyle Lovett, wardrobe by Kathy Gifford.